The Yaksha brought in the message, and the Dragon King rose hastily and came to the door of his palace, bringing with him his dragon children and grandchildren, his shrimp soldiers and crab generals.
"Come in, High Immortal, come in," he said.
They went into the palace and sat face to face on the upper seat. When they had taken tea, the dragon asked,
"How long, pray, have you been illumined, and what magic arts have you learned?"
"I have led a religious life since my infancy," said Monkey, "and now I am beyond birth and destruction. Recently I have been training my subjects how to defend their home, but I have myself no suitable weapon. I am told that my honored neighbor within the shell portals of his green jade palace certainly has many magic weapons to spare."
The Dragon King did not like to refuse, and ordered a trout captain to bring out a huge sword.
"I'm no good with a sword," said Monkey. "Can't you find me something else?"
The Dragon King then told a whitebait guardsman, with the help of an eel porter, to bring out a 9-pronged fork. Monkey took hold of it and tried a few thrusts.
"Ah, it's much too light," he said. "It does not suit my hand. Can't you find me something else?"
"I really don't know what you mean," said the Dragon King. "The fork weighs 3,600 pounds.
"It doesn't suit my hand," said Monkey. "It doesn't suit my hand."
The Dragon King was very much upset, and ordered a bream general and a carp brigadier to bring out a huge halberd weighing 7,200 pounds. Monkey seized it, and after making a few thrusts and parries, tossed it away, saying,
"Still too light."
"It's the heaviest weapon we've got in the place," said the Dragon King. "I have nothing else to show you."
"The proverb says it's no use the Dragon King pretending he's got no treasures," said Monkey. "Just look again, and if you succeed in finding something suitable, I'll give you a good price."
"I warn you, I haven't got anything else," said the Dragon King.
At this point, the Dragon Mother and her daughter slipped out from the back rooms of the palace and said,
"Great King, we can see that this monkey sage is of no common capacities. In our treasury is the magic iron with which the bed of the Milky Way was pounded flat. For several days past, it has been glowing with a strange light. Was this not perhaps an omen that it should be given to the sage who has just arrived?"
"Yes, this," said the Dragon King, "is the thing that was used by the great Yi when he subdued the flood to fix the depth of the river and seas. It's only a piece of holy iron. What use would it be to him?"
"Don't worry about whether he uses it or not,"
said the Dragon Mother.
"Just give it to him, and if he can cope with it, let him take it away with him."
The Dragon King agreed and told Monkey.
"Bring it to me, I'll have a look at it,"
said Monkey.
"Out of the question," said the Dragon King. "It's too heavy to move. You'll have to go and look at it."
"Where is it?"
asked Monkey.
"Show me the way."
The Dragon King accordingly brought him to the sea treasury, where he saw at once something shining with innumerable beams of golden light.
"There it is,"
said the Dragon King. Monkey respectfully tied himself and approached the object. It turned out to be a thick iron pillar about 20 feet long. Monkey took one end in both hands and raised it a little.
"A trifle too long and too thick," he said.
The pillar at once became several feet shorter and one layer thinner. Monkey felt it.
"A little smaller still wouldn't do any harm," he said.
The pillar at once shrunk again. Monkey was delighted. Taking it out into the daylight, he found that at each end was a golden clasp, while in between all was black iron. On the near end was the inscription, "Golden Clasped Wishing Staff. Weight 13,500 pounds.
"Splendid," thought Monkey.
"What couldn't wish for a better treasure than this?"
But as he went along, he thought to himself, fingering the staff,
"If only it were a little smaller, it would be marvellous."
And sure enough, by the time he got outside, it was not much more than 2 feet long. Look at him. How he displays its magic, making sudden thrusts and passes on his way back to the palace. The Dragon King trembled at the sight, and the Dragon Princes were all in a flutter. Tortoises and turtles drew in their heads, fishes, crabs, and shrimps all hid themselves away. Monkey, with the treasure in his hand, sat down by the Dragon King.
"I am deeply grateful for my honored neighbor's kindness," he said.
"Pray don't mention it," said the Dragon King.
"Yes, that's a useful bit of iron," said Monkey. "But there's just one more thing I should like to say."
"Great immortal," said the Dragon King, "what else have you to say?"
"Before I had this iron," said Monkey, "it was another matter, but with a thing like this in my hand, I begin to feel the lack of anything suitable to wear with it. If you have got anything in that line, please let me have it. I shall really be very grateful."
"I have nothing at all," said the Dragon King.
"You know the old saying," said Monkey, "one guest should not trouble two hosts. You won't get rid of me by pretending you haven't got any."
"You might try another sea," said the Dragon King. "It's just possible they would be able to help you."
"Better to sit in one house than run to three," said Monkey. "I insist on your finding me something."
"I assure you I don't possess anything of that sort," said the Dragon King. "If I did, you should have it."
"All right," said Monkey. "I'll try my iron on you, and we shall soon see whether you can give me one."
"Steady, steady, great immortal," said the Dragon King. "Don't strike. Just let me find out whether my brothers have got anything that you could have."
"Where do they live?"
asked Monkey.
"They are the dragons of the southern, northern, and western seas," said the Dragon King.
"I'm not going as far as that," said Monkey. "Two in hand is better than three in bond. You must find me something here and now. I don't mind where you get it from."
"I never suggested that you should go," said the Dragon King. "We've got an iron drum and a bronze gong here. If anything important happens, I have them sounded, and my brothers come immediately."
"Oh, very well," said Monkey. "Look sharp and sound the drum and gong."
A crocodile accordingly beat the drum, and a turtle sounded the gong, and in a twinkling the three dragons arrived.
"Brother,"
said the Dragon of the South,
"what urgent business has made you beat the drum and sound the gong?" "You may well ask,"
said the Dragon King.
"A neighbour of mine, the sage of the mountain of flowers and fruit, came to me today asking for a magic weapon. I gave him the iron with which the Milky Way was pounded. Now he says he must have clothes. We have nothing of that sort here. Couldn't one of you find me something so that we can get rid of him?"
The Dragon of the South was furious.
"Brothers," he cried, "let us summon men at arms and arrest the rascal." "Out of the question,"
said the Dragon King.
"The slightest touch of that iron is deadly."
"It would be better not to tamper with him," said the Dragon of the West. "We'll give him some clothes just to get rid of him, and then we'll complain to heaven, and heaven will punish him."
"That's a good idea," said the Dragon of the North. "I've got a pair of cloud-stepping shoes made of lotus fibre."
"I've got a cap of phoenix plume and red gold," said the Dragon of the South. "I've got a jerkin of chain mail made of yellow gold," said the Dragon of the West.
The Dragon King was delighted, and brought them in to see Monkey and offer their gifts. Monkey put the things on, and with his wishing staff in his hand, strode out.
"Dirty old sneaks!"
he called out to the dragons as he passed. In great indignation, they consulted together about reporting him to the powers above. The four old monkeys and all the rest were waiting for their king beside the bridge. Suddenly they saw him spring out of the waves without a drop of water on him, all shining and golden. and ran up the bridge. They all knelt down, crying, "Great King, what splendors!" With the spring wind full in his face, Monkey mounted the throne and set up the iron staff in front of him. The monkeys all rushed to the treasure and tried to lift it. As well might a dragonfly try to shake an ironwood tree. They could not move it an inch.
"Father," they cried, "you're the only person that could lift a thing as heavy as that."
"There's nothing but has its master," said Monkey, lifting it with one hand.
"This iron lay in the sea treasury for I don't know how many thousand years, and only recently began to shine. The Dragon King thought it was nothing but black iron, and said it was used to flatten out the Milky Way. None of them could lift it, and they asked me to go and take it for myself. When I first saw it, it was 20 feet long. I thought that was a bit too big, so I gradually made it smaller and smaller. Now just you watch while I change it again," he cried. "Smaller, smaller, smaller!"
And immediately it became exactly like an embroidery needle, and could comfortably be worn behind the ear.
"Take it out and do another trick with it,"
the monkeys begged. He took it from behind his ear and set it upright on the palm of his hand, crying, "Larger, larger!" It at once became 20 feet long, whereupon he carried it up onto the bridge, employed a cosmic magic, and bent at the waist, crying, "Tall!" At which at once he became 100,000 feet high. His head was on a level with the highest mountains, his waist with the ridges, his eye blazed like lightning, his mouth was like a blood bowl, his teeth like sword blades. The iron staff in his hand reached up to the 33rd heaven and down to the 18th pit of hell. Tigers, panthers, wolves, all the evil spirits of the hill, and the demons of the 72 caves did homage to him in awe and trembling. Presently he withdrew his cosmic manifestation, and the staff again became an embroidery needle. He put it behind his ear and came back to the cave. One day, when Monkey had been giving a great banquet to the beast monarchs of the neighbourhood, after seeing them off and giving presents to the leaders, great and small, he lay down under a pine tree at the side of the iron bridge and fell asleep. In his sleep, he saw two men coming towards him, bearing a document on which was his name. Without giving him time to say a word, they brought out a rope, and binding Monkey's dream body, they marched him away, presently bringing him to the outskirts of a walled city. Coming to himself and looking up, he saw that on the wall of this city was an iron placard saying, "Land of Darkness."
"Why?"
said Monkey to himself, suddenly realizing with an unpleasant shock where he had got to.
"That's where Yama, the King of Death, lives. How did I get here?"
"Your time in the world of life is up," said the two men, "and we were sent to arrest you."
"But I have got beyond all that,"
said Monkey.
"I am no longer compounded of the five elements, and do not come under death's jurisdiction. What's all this nonsense about arresting me?"
The two men took no notice and continued to drag him along. Monkey now became very angry, snatched the needle from behind his ear, changed into a formidable size, and pounded the two messengers into mincemeat. Then he freed himself from his bonds and, swinging his staff, strode into the city. Bull-headed demons and horse-faced demons fled before him in terror. A mass of ghosts rushed to the palace, announcing that a furry-faced thunder-god was advancing to the attack. In great consternation, the 10 judges of the dead tidied themselves and came to see what was afoot. Seeing Monkey's ferocious appearance, they lined up and accosted him in a loud voice,
"Your name, please."
"If you don't know who I am, then why did you send 2 men to arrest me?"
asked Monkey.
"How can you accuse us of such a thing?"
they said.
"No doubt the messengers made a mistake."
"I am the sage from the Water Curtain Cave,"
said Monkey.
"Who are you?"
"We are the 10 judges of the Emperor of Death,"
they said.
"In that case," said Monkey, "you are concerned with retribution and rewards, and ought not to let such mistakes occur."
I would have you know that by my exertions I have become an immortal and am no longer subjected to your jurisdiction. Why did you order my arrest?
There's no need to lose your temper, they said. It's a case of mistaken identity. The world is a big place, and there are bound to be cases of several people having the same name. No doubt our officers have made a mistake.
Nonsense, Monkey said. The proverb says, magistrate's heir, clerk's heir, the man with the warrant never errs. Be quick and bring out the registers of the quick and the dead, and we'll soon see.
Come this way, please,
they said, and took him to the great hall, where they ordered the official in charge of the record to bring out his files. The official dived into a side room and came out with five or six ledgers, divided into 10 files, and began going through them one by one.
Bald insects, furry insects, winged insects, scaly insects.
He gave up in despair and tried monkeys. But the Monkey King, having human characteristics, was not there. Not, however, being subject to the unicorn, he did not come into any animal category. And as he was not subject to the phoenix, he could not be classed as a bird. But there was a separate file, which Monkey insisted on examining himself, and there, under the heading Soul 3150, he found his own name, followed by the words Parentage, Natural Product, Description, Stone Monkey, Lifespan, 342 years. A peaceful end.
I haven't got a lifespan at all, said Monkey. I'm eternal. I shall cross my name out. Give me a brush.
The official hastened to provide a brush, soaked in heavy ink, and Monkey put a stroke not only through his own name, but through those of all the monkeys named in the monkey file, then throwing down the ledger.
There's an end of the matter, he exclaimed. Now, at any rate, you've got no hold over us.
So saying, he picked up his staff and forced his way out of the Palace of Darkness. The 10 judges dared not protest, but all went off at once to Kishiti Garba, guide of the dead, and discussed with him the advisability of laying a complaint about the matter before the Jade Emperor in heaven. As Monkey rushed naked out of the city, his foot caught in a coil of creeper, and he stumbled. He woke with a start and found that it had all been a dream. Sitting up, he heard the four old monkeys and the others who were mounting guard over him saying,
Great King, isn't it time you woke up? You drank so heavily you've been sleeping here all night.
I must have dozed off for a time, said Monkey, for I dreamt that two men came to arrest me.
And he told them his dream.
I crossed off all our names, he said, so the fellows won't be able to interfere with us any more.
The monkeys kowtowed and thanked him. From that time onward, it has been noticed that many mountain monkeys never grow old. It is because their names were crossed out from the registers of the King of Death. One morning when the Jade Emperor was sitting in his golden-doored cloud palace, with all his ministers, civil and military, an officer announced,
Your Majesty, the Dragon of the Eastern Sea is outside, with a plea to lay before you.
The dragon was shown in, and when he had paid his respects, a fairy boy presented a document which the Jade Emperor began to read.
This small dragon of the Eastern Sea informs your Majesty that a certain counterfeit immortal from the water curtain cave has maltreated your servant, forcing away into his watery home. He demanded a weapon, using gross intimidation, and forced us to give him garments by violence and outrage. My watery kinsmen were dismayed. Tortoises and turtles fled in panic. The dragon of the south trembled. The dragon of the west was appalled. The dragon of the north collapsed. Your servant was obliged to part with a holy iron staff, a phoenix plume hat, a coat of mail, and a pair of cloud-stepping shoes, before we could get rid of him. But even then he threatened us with arms and magic and called us dirty old sneaks. We are ourselves quite unable to deal with him and must leave the matter entirely in your hands. We earnestly beg that you will send soldiers to control this pest and restore peace to the world below the waves.
Having read the document, the Jade Emperor gave judgment.
The dragon, he said, is to return to his sea, and I will send officers to arrest the criminal.
The Dragon King bowed and retired, whereupon another officer immediately appeared, announcing that the first judge of the dead, supported by Kashidi Garba, the advocate of the dead, had arrived with a petition. With them was a fairy girl, who presented a document which read as follows. We respectfully submit that heaven above is for spirits, and the underworld is for ghosts. Darkness and light must have their succession. Such is the way of nature and cannot be changed. But a counterfeit sage from the Water Curtain Cave has violently resisted our summons, beating to death our emissaries and menacing the 10 judges. He made an uproar in the Palace of Death and erased names from our books so that in future monkeys and apes will enjoy improper longevity. We therefore appeal to your majesty to show your authority by sending spirit soldiers to deal with this monster, restore the balance of dark and light, and bring back peace to the underworld.
The Jade Emperor gave judgment. The Lords of Darkness are to return to the underworld, and officers shall be sent to arrest this pest.
The first judge of the dead bowed and retired.
How long has this pernicious monkey been in existence?
The Jade Emperor asked of his ministers.
And how comes it that he acquired illumination?
At once the officer of the Thousand League Eye and the officer of Down the Wind Ear stepped forward.
This monkey, they said, was emitted 300 years ago by a stone. At first he displayed none of his present powers, but since then he has managed somehow to perfect himself and achieve immortality. He now subdues dragons, tames tigers, and has tampered with the registers of death.
Which of you deities will go down and deal with him? Asked the Jade Emperor.
The spirit of the planet Venus came forward.
Highest and holiest, he said, all creatures that have 9 apertures are capable of achieving immortality. Small wonder, then, that this monkey, produced by the natural forces of heaven and earth, nurtured by the light of the sun and moon, fed by the frost and dew, should have achieved immortality and subdue dragons and tigers. I suggest that an indulgent course should be followed. Let us send a rescript commanding him to appear in heaven. We will then give him official work of some kind, so that his name will appear on our rolls, and we shall be able to keep an eye on him here. If he behaves well, he can be promoted. And if he misbehaves, he must be put under arrest. This, of course, will save us from military operations, and will add to our numbers an undoubted immortal.
This suggestion pleased the Jade Emperor. He ordered the spirit of the Book Star to draw up a summons, and bade the planet Venus deliver it. He went out at the southern gate of heaven, lowered his magic cloud, and soon reached the Water Curtain Cave, where he said to the crowd of monkeys, I am a messenger from heaven, bearing a command that your king is to proceed at once to the upper realms. Tell him of this immediately. The little monkeys outside the cave sent word to the interior that an old man had come with some writing in his hand.
He says he's a messenger from heaven, sent to ask you to go with him.
That's very convenient, said Monkey. I've been thinking lately of making a little trip to heaven.
Monkey hurriedly tidied himself and went to the door.
I am the spirit of the planet Venus, the messenger said, and I bring an order from the Jade Emperor that you are to come up to heaven and receive an immortal appointment.
Foul star, said Monkey, I'm much obliged to you for your trouble.
And he told the monkeys to prepare a banquet.
With the sacred command about me, I dare not linger, said the star. After your glorious ascension, we shall have ample opportunity for conversation.
I will not insist, said Monkey. It is a great honor for us that you should have paid this visit.
Then he called the 4 old monkeys to him.
Don't forget to put the young monkeys through their paces, he said. I'll have a look round when I get to heaven, and if it seems all right there, I'll send for the rest of you to come and live with me.
The old monkeys signified their agreement, and the Monkey King, following the star spirit, mounted the cloud and soared up. If you do not know what rank it was they gave him, you must listen to the next chapter. When they had mounted together for a little while, Monkey forgot all about the star spirit and soon left him far behind, and when he reached the southern gate of heaven, the spirit was out of sight. He was just going in when a number of guardian deities, armed with daggers, swords, and halberds, barred his path.
"What an old swindler that planet is!" exclaimed Monkey. "Fancy letting these cutthroats hold me up like this after inviting me to come!"
At this point, the planet arrived, quite out of breath.
"You old fraud!" said Monkey, confronting him. "You said you'd come with an invitation from the Jade Emperor. Why are these people barring the gate?"
Don't be angry," said the planet. "As you haven't been to the Hall of Heaven before, and haven't yet been given a name, the guardians don't know who you are, and are quite right not to let you pass. When you have seen the Emperor and received your appointment, they'll let you go in and out as you please."
"That's as may be," said Monkey. "But at the present moment I can't get in."
"You can if you come with me," said the planet, and he called out in a loud voice,
"Guardians of the gate of heaven, captains great and small, make way. This is an immortal from earth below, whom the Jade Emperor commissioned me to bring here."
The guardians then withdrew their weapons and retired. Monkey, his confidence in the planet now quite restored, walked slowly by his side through the gates and on into the palace. Without waiting to be announced, they went at once into the august presence. The planet immediately prostrated himself, but Monkey stood erect by his side, not showing any sign of respect, but only pricking his ears to hear what the planet would say.
"I beg to report," he said, "that I have carried out your command. The pernicious immortal is here."
"Which is he?"
asked the Emperor, peeping over the top of his screen of state. At this point, Monkey bowed, saying,
"It's me."
The assembled ministers turned pale with horror.
"This barbarous monkey," they cried. "When brought into the presence, he did not prostrate himself, and now, without being addressed, he has ventured to say,
'It's me.'
Such conduct is worthy of death."
"He comes from earth below," said the Jade Emperor, "and only recently learned human ways. For the present, we must not be too hard on him if he does not know how to behave at court."
The celestial ministers all congratulated the Emperor on his clemency, and Monkey shouted,
"Bravo!"
at the top of his voice. Officials were then ordered to look through the lists and see what appointments were vacant.
"There is no vacancy at present in any section of any department," one of them reported. "The only chance is in the Imperial stables, where a supervisor is wanted."
"Very well, then," said the Jade Emperor. "Make him Pyamar Wayne in the stables."
Accordingly, he was taken to the stables, and the duties of this department were explained to him. He was shown the list of horses, of which there were 1,000, under the care of a steward whose duty it was to provide fodder, grooms who combed and washed the horses, chopped hay, brought them their water, and cooked their food. The superintendent and vice-superintendent helped the supervisor in the general management. All of them were on the alert night and day. In the daytime, they managed to get a certain amount of fun, but at night, they were on the go all the time. The horses all seemed either to go to sleep just when they ought to be fed, or to start galloping when they ought to be in the stalls. When they saw Monkey, the heavenly horses pressed round him in a surging mob and ate the food he brought them with such appetite as they had never shown before. After a week or two, the other officers of the stables gave a banquet to celebrate Monkey's appointment. When the feast was at its height, he suddenly paused, cup in hand, and asked,
"What does it mean, this word, Pyamar Wayne?"
"It's the name of the rank you hold," they said.
"What class of appointment is it?"
Monkey asked.
"It doesn't come in any class," they said.
"I suppose it's too high to count as being in any class,"
said Monkey.
"On the contrary," they said, "it's too low."
"Too low?"
exclaimed Monkey.
"What do you mean?"
when an officer doesn't manage to get classed, they put him to mind the horses. There's no salary attached. The most you'll get for fattening up the horses, as you've done since you were here, is a casual, not bad. But if any of them had gone a bit lame or out of condition, you'd have caught it hot. And if any of them had come to real harm, you'd have been prosecuted and fined. Flames leapt up in Monkey's heart when he heard this. He ground his teeth and said in a great rage,
"So that's what they think of me. Don't they know that on the mountain of flowers and fruit I was king and patriarch? How dare they swindle me with coming and looking after their horses? If looking after horses is a job for the lowest riff-raff of all, what do they want to put me into it for? I won't stand it. I'm going at once."
With a sudden cry of rage, he pushed over the official desk, took his treasure from behind his ear, and rushed out to the southern gate. The deities on guard, knowing that he was now an official and authorized to go in and out, did not attempt to stop him. Soon he lowered his cloud and landed on the mountain of flowers and fruit.
"Little ones,"
he cried,
"old Monkey has come back."
They gave him a great banquet of welcome, saying, "As your majesty has stayed away in the upper regions for 10 years, we may surely presume that you have had a great success there."
"I've been away about a fortnight,"
said Monkey.
"What do you mean by 10 years?
"In heaven," they said, "you didn't notice how the time was going. One day in heaven is a year below. Tell us, please, what rank they gave you."
"Don't talk of it," said Monkey, "or I shall die of shame. The Jade Emperor has no idea how to make use of one. He saw what I am, but all he could do was to make me into something they call a Pai Ma Wain. I was told to look after his horses. Just a menial post to which no rank attaches at all. I didn't realize this when I took the job, and didn't have a bad time playing about in the stables. But today I asked some of the others and discovered what sort of post it was. I was furious and gave up the job at once. So here I am."
"And a good thing, too," they said. "With an enchanted spot like this to rule over, what sense is there in going away to be a groom? Little ones, prepare a banquet to cheer our great king." They were just beginning to drink when someone announced that 2 one-horned demon kings were outside asking to see the Monkey King.
"Show them in,"
said Monkey. The demons tidied themselves and hastened into the cave, prostrating themselves deeply.
"What has brought you here?"
asked Monkey.
"We have known for a long time,"
they said,
"that you appreciate good qualities, but no suitable occasion presented itself for us to pay you our respects. However, hearing that you had secured a post in heaven and returned triumphant, we thought you would not object to receiving a little present. Here is a red and yellow rug, which we hope you will accept, and if you will deign also to take into your service such humble folk as ourselves, we are ready to perform the most menial of tasks."
Monkey wrapped the rug round himself in high glee, and all his subjects lined up and did homage. The demon kings were made marshals of the vanguard, and when they expressed their gratitude, they asked what position Monkey held in heaven.
"The Jade Emperor," said Monkey, "has no regard for talent. He made me a groom in the stables."
"With magic powers like yours,"
they said,
"why should you stoop to look after horses? The great sage equal of heaven, that is the title for such a one as you."
Monkey was delighted with the sound of this, and having exclaimed,
"God! Good, good!"
many times, he ordered his generals to set up a banner with "Great Sage, Equal of Heaven," written on it in large letters. Henceforward, he said, he was to be addressed by no other name, and instructions to this effect were to be given to all fiends that acknowledged his sway. When the Jade Emperor held his court next day, the head of the stable appeared, kneeling on the steps of the throne, announcing that the newly appointed groom had complained that the job was not good enough for him, and had returned to earth.
"Oh, very good," said the Jade Emperor. "You may return to your duties. I will send heavenly soldiers to arrest him."
At once, Vaisravana and his son Netha came forward and volunteered for this service. They were put in command of the expedition and appointed the mighty magic spirit to lead the way, the fish belly general to bring up the rear, and the captain of the yakshas to drive the troops on. Soon they were out of the southern gate of heaven and on their way to the mountain of flowers and fruit. They then chose a flat piece of ground where they encamped, and the mighty magic spirit was chosen to provoke battle. He buckled on his armor, and brandishing his great axe, he strode towards the mouth of the water curtain cave. Outside it were gathered together a band of monsters, wolves, tigers, and so on, prancing about, flourishing spears and swords, leaping and noisily brawling.
"Accursed creatures!" cried the spirit. "Go quickly and tell the groom that a great commandant from heaven has come by order of the Jade Emperor to receive his submission. Tell him to be quick about it, or you will all of you pay with your lives."
The monsters came helter-skelter into the cave.
"Oh, a terrible thing has happened,"
they announced.
"What's the matter?"
asked Monkey.
"There is a heavenly commandant at the gate," they said, "declaring that he has been sent by the Jade Emperor to receive your submission. If you don't submit at once, he says we shall all pay for it with our lives."
"Bring me my arms," cried Monkey.
He put on his bronze helmet, his gold corselet, and cloud-stepping shoes, and with his magic staff in his hand, he led out his followers and arrayed them for battle. When the mighty magic spirit saw him,
"Wretched Monkey," he cried, "do you know me or not?"
"What scurvy deity are you?"
asked Monkey.
"I have never set eyes on you. Tell me your name at once."
"Vile trickster," cried he,
"how dare you pretend you do not know me? I am the leader of the vanguard of Vaisravana's heavenly host, the mighty magic spirit. I come by command of the Jade Emperor to receive your submission. Disarm at once, and throw yourself in heaven's mercy, or all the denizens of this mountain will be put to the sword. Breathe so much as half of the word no, and you will instantly be sliced to pieces."
"Scurvy deity,"
cried Monkey, very angry.
"Stop your bragging. If I were to strike you dead with one blow of my staff, you could not carry my message. So I shall spare your life, that you may go back to heaven and tell the Jade Emperor that he does not know how to use a good man when he finds one. I have innumerable arts of magic. Why should I be put to mind the horses? Look what is written on this banner. If he admits my right to this title, I will leave him in peace. But if he refuses, I will come up at once and strike such a blow at his palace as will tumble him from his dragon couch."
Looking about, the spirit saw the banner with its inscription and laughed aloud.
"The impudence of this vile monkey," he cried. "Call yourself equal of heaven if you please, but first swallow a good dose of this axe of mine."
And he struck at Monkey's head, but Monkey was not ruffled, and met the blow with his staff. It was a good fight that followed. At last the spirit could withstand no longer. Monkey aimed a smashing blow at his head, which he attempted to parry with his axe. The axe split in two, and he was obliged to run for his life. Back in the camp he went straight to Vaisravana, and kneeling before him panted out,
The groom has magic powers that are too great for us. I was unable to stand up to him and have come to plead for mercy."
"This wretch," said Vaisravana, looking contemptuously at the spirit,
"has humiliated me. Take him away and cut off his head."
But his son, Prince Netha, slipped forward and said, bowing profoundly,
"Father, do not be angry. Spare the spirit for a while and let me go to do battle, that we may know how things really stand."
Vaisravana accepted this offer and ordered the spirit to go back to his camp and await trial. The prince, having buckled on his armour, sprang from the camp and rushed to the cave of the water curtain. Monkey was just disarming himself, but now came to the gate and said,
"Whose little brother are you? And why have you come gate-crashing here?"
"Nauseous ape!" cried Nathan. "Why pretend you do not know me? I am Vaisravana's third son. The Jade Emperor has sent me here to arrest you."
"Little prince," laughed Monkey, "you have not yet lost your milk teeth. Your womb down is not yet dry. How dare you talk so big? For the moment, I'll spare your life, provided you look at what is written on the banner and tell the Jade Emperor that if he will give me that rank, he need send no more armies. I will submit of my own accord. But if he will not agree, I shall come and batter down his jewel palace of the magic mists."
Nathan looked up and saw the inscription, "Great Sage, Equal of Heaven."
"You must think yourself a wonder-worker indeed, that you dare lay claim to such a title. Don't worry, one stroke of my sword will settle you," said Nathan.
"I'll stand my ground," said Monkey, "and you can break as many swords upon me as you like."
"Change!"
roared Nathan. And he at once changed into a deity with three heads and six arms.
"So this little brother," said Monkey, "knows some tricks. I'll trouble you to look at my magic."
So saying, he too assumed three heads and six arms, and at the same time changed his cudgel into three cudgels, each of which he grasped with two hands. The battle that followed was one that shook the earth and rattled the hills. Truly a good fight. Each displayed his terrifying powers, and they battled as many as 30 times. The prince turned his six weapons into 1,000,000 weapons. Monkey followed suit. The sparks fell like falling stars as they fought halfway up in the sky, and still neither gained advantage. But Monkey was very swift of hand and eye. Just at the height of the fray, he changed back into his proper shape, and cudgel in hand, closed with Nathan. In his own shape, he moved with greater freedom. Getting behind the prince's head, he brought down a mighty blow on his shoulder. Just as Nathan was preparing a new magic, he heard the swish of Monkey's cudgel as it clove the air. He had no time to dodge, and so great was his pain that he at once took to his heels, changed into his true form, and returned ignominiously to his father's camp. Vaisravana had been watching the battle, and was just thinking of going to his son's assistance, when Nathan suddenly appeared before him, trembling from head to foot, and said,
"My father and king, the groom has indeed stupendous powers, even such magic as mine could not withstand him, and in the end he wounded my shoulder."
"If a fellow has such powers as this," said Vaisravana, dismayed, "how are we to bring him to heel?"
"Outside his cave," said the prince, "he has put up a banner upon which is written, 'Great Sage, Equal of Heaven.' He had the insolence to say that if you would acknowledge his right to this title, he would give no more trouble. Otherwise he will batter down the jewel palace of magic mists."
"If that is so," said Vaisravana, "we had better leave him alone for the present. I will report this to the Jade Emperor and ask for heavenly reinforcements, that we may hem him in while there is still time."
"Am I to believe,"
said the Jade Emperor when the situation was explained to him,
"that one monkey is so powerful that reinforcements are needed to deal with him?"
Nathan then stepped forward.
"Great one," he said, "though I know I deserve death at your hands, I beg you to hear me. That monkey possesses an iron cudgel with which he first defeated the river spirit and then wounded my shoulder."
"Take the whole army," said the emperor, "and slay him immediately."
At this moment the spirit of the planet Venus stepped forward.
"That monkey," he said, "flings his words about recklessly, and there is no reason to suppose that he can do all that he threatens to do. But if soldiers are sent to deal with him, it will mean a long and exhausting campaign.
It would be better if your majesty were to pursue a policy of mercy. Say that you desire a peaceful solution and are quite willing to let him be the sage equal of heaven. There would be no harm in his having a nominal post under that title. Of course, without salary.
I don't think I quite understand, said the Jade Emperor, what you are proposing that his position should be.
He could be called by that title, said the planet, without having any special duties or any salary. The advantage would be that living on celestial ground, he would soon turn from his depravity, cease his mad tricks, and the universe would have a chance to settle down quietly.
Agreed, said the Emperor,
and the planet was sent to convey the peace offering. He left heaven by the southern gate and went straight to the cave of the water curtain. Things were very different this time. The place bristled with weapons. Every sort of wild ogre was on guard, and they were armed with lances, swords, staves, which they brandished fiercely, leaping this way and that. Seeing the star spirit, they all rushed forward.
Come, chieftains, said the spirit. I'll trouble you to tell your master that I am here. I am a heavenly messenger sent by God on high, and am come with a summons to your king.
Welcome to him, said Monkey, when he heard that a messenger had come. It must be the spirit of the planet Venus who came to fetch me before. That time, though, the job I got was not worthy of me. My time in heaven was not entirely wasted. I ran round a great deal and got to know my way about. No doubt he's come this time to offer me something better.
And he ordered the chieftains to lead the spirit in with a great waving of flags and rattle of drums. Monkey received him at the mouth of the cave in full panoply, surrounded by hosts of lesser apes.
Step in, old star, he called, and forgive me for not having come to meet you.
Your colleagues, said the planet, informed the Jade Emperor that you were discontented with your appointment in the stables and had absconded. Everyone has to start with something small and work his way upward, said the Emperor. What has he got to complain of? And armies were sent to subdue you. When your magic powers proved superior to theirs, and it was proposed to band together all the forces of heaven and dispatch them against you, I put in a word, suggesting that you should be accorded the title you have assumed. This was accepted, and I have come to fetch you.
Well, I'm much obliged to you for your trouble this time and last, said Monkey. But I don't know that there is such a rank in heaven as great sage, equal of heaven.
My proposal was that you should have this rank, said the planet. And it was accepted. Otherwise I should never have dared to come with a message. If anything goes wrong, I am ready to take the responsibility.
Monkey wished to detain the planet and give a banquet in his honour, but the planet would not stay, and they both set off together for the southern gate of heaven. When the monkey groom was announced, the Jade Emperor said,
Come forward, Monkey. I hereby proclaim you great sage equal of heaven. The rank is a high one, and I hope we shall have no more nonsense.
Monkey gave a great whoop of delight and thanked the Emperor profusely. Heavenly carpenters were ordered to build the office of the great sage to the right of the peach garden. It had two departments, one called Peace and Quiet and the other Calm Spirit. In each were immortal officers who attended Monkey wherever he went. A star spirit was detailed to escort Monkey to his new quarters, and he was allowed a ration of 2 jars of imperial wine and 10 sprays of gold leaf flowers. He was begged not to allow himself to get in any way excited or start again on his pranks. As soon as he arrived, he opened both jars and invited everyone in his office to a feast. The star spirit went back to his own quarters, and Monkey, left to his own devices, lived in such perfect freedom and delight as in earth or heaven have never had their like. And if you do not know what happened in the end, you must listen to what is told in the next chapter. Monkey knew nothing about official matters, and it was fortunate that all he had to do was to mark his name on a list. For the rest, he and his subordinates ate their three meals, slept soundly at night, had no worries, but only perfect freedom and independence. When there was nothing else going on, he went round and made friends with the other denizens of heaven. He was careful to address the members of the Trinity as Venerable, and the four emperors as Majesty, but all the rest, planets, lunar mansions, spirits of the hours and days, he treated as equals. Today he wandered east, tomorrow rambled west. His goings and comings were unhampered as the passage of the clouds. One day, at court, an immortal stepped forward and made the following petition. I submit that the sage, equal of heaven, has no duties to perform. He spends all his time going round and making friends. All the stars of heaven, high and low, are now his cronies. Trouble will come of it, unless some way is found of employing his time.
The jade emperor accordingly sent for Monkey, who arrived in high glee, asking,
What promotion or reward has your majesty sent for me to announce?
I hear, said the emperor, that you have nothing in particular to do, and I am going to give you a job. You are to look after the peach garden. I wish you to devote the greatest attention to this work.
Monkey was in wild delight and unable to wait for a moment. He rushed off to take over his new duties in the peach garden. Here he found a local spirit who cried out to him,
Great sage, where are you going?
To take charge of the peach garden, he said.
I've been appointed by his majesty.
The spirit bowed low and called to hoe earth, draw water, peach tender and leaf sweeper, the strong men who worked the garden, to come forward and kowtow to Monkey.
How many trees are there?
Monkey asked of the local spirit.
3,600, he said. On the outer side, 1,200 with inconspicuous flowers and small fruit.
They ripen once in 3,000 years. Whoever eats them becomes a fairy, all wise. His limbs are strong and his body light. In the middle of the garden are 1,200 trees with double blossom and sweet fruit. They ripen once in 6,000 years. Whoever eats them can levitate at will and never grows old. At the back of the garden are 1,200 trees. The fruit has purple markings, and the stones are pale yellow. They ripen once in 9,000 years. Whoever eats them outlasts heaven and earth, and is the compeer of sun and moon. Monkey was delighted, and began at once inspecting the trees and listing the arbors and pagodas. Henceforward he amused himself only once a month, on the day of the full moon, but otherwise saw no friends and went nowhere. One day he saw that high up on some of the trees many of the peaches were ripe, and he made up his mind to eat them before anyone else got a chance. Unfortunately he was closely watched by his followers, and to shake them off he said,
I'm feeling tired, and I'm going to take a short rest in the arbor. Go and wait for me outside the gates.
When they had retired, he took off his court hat and robes, and scrambled up onto a high tree, and began to pluck the ripest and largest fruit he could see. Sitting astride a bough, he regaled himself to his heart's content, and then came down. He put on his hat and robes, and called to his followers to attend him, while he returned in state to his lodging. After a few days, he did the same thing again. One morning, Her Majesty the Queen of Heaven, having made up her mind to give a peach banquet, told the fairy maidens, Red Jacket, Blue Jacket, White Jacket, Black Jacket, Purple Jacket, Yellow Jacket, and Green Jacket, to take their baskets and pick peaches in the peach garden. They found Monkey's followers barring the gate.
We have come, they said, by command of Her Majesty, to pick peaches for a banquet.
Halt, my fairy beauties, said one of the guards. Things have changed since last year. This garden has been put in charge of the great sage, equal of heaven, and we must get his permission before we can let you in.
Where is he?
They asked. He's feeling rather tired, the guardian spirit said, and is having a nap in the arbor.
Oh, very well, then, they said. Go and look for him, for we must get to work at once.
They consented to go and tell him, but find the arbor empty, save for Monkey's hat and robe. They began looking for him, but he was nowhere to be seen. The fact was that Monkey, after slipping away and eating several peaches, had changed himself into a little fellow 2 inches long and was curled up asleep under a thick leaf high up on the tree.
"We must carry out our orders," said the fairy maidens, "whether you find him or not. We can't go back empty-handed."
"Quite right, fairy beauties," said an officer. "We must not keep you waiting. Our master has been used to going about a great deal, and probably has gone to look up some of his old friends. Just you go and pick your peaches, and we'll tell him when he comes back."
So they went into the garden, and first they picked 3 baskets full from the trees in the near part of the garden, then 3 from the trees in the middle. But when they came to the trees at the back, they found nothing but snapped stalks. All the peaches had been taken. However, when they had looked about for some time, they did succeed in finding 1 solitary peach that was not quite ripe, hanging on a southward-facing bough. Blue Jacket pulled the bough towards her and picked the peach, then let go. This was the very bough where Monkey was sleeping in his diminutive form. The jerk awoke him, and rapidly changing himself back again, he cried out,
"Where have you come from, monsters? And how comes it that you have the audacity to pick my peaches?"
The terrified fairy maidens with 1 accord fell upon their knees, crying,
"Great sage, don't be angry. We are not monsters. We are 7 fairy maidens sent by the Queen of Heaven to pick peaches for her peach banquet. When we came to the gate, we found your officers on guard. They looked everywhere for you, but couldn't find you. We were afraid to keep Her Majesty waiting. So, as you could not be found, we came in and began to pick. We beseech you to forgive us."
Monkey became all affability.
"Rise from your knees, fairies," he said. "Tell me now, who is invited to this banquet?"
"It is an official banquet," they said, "and certain deities are invited as a matter of course. The Buddha of the Western Heaven will be there, and the Bodhisattvas, and the Lohans, Kuan Yin, too, and all the immortals of the 10 islands. Then there will be the 5 spirits of the Pole Star, the emperors of the 4 quarters, the gods and immortals of the seas and hills. All of them will come to the banquet."
"Shall I be asked?"
inquired Monkey.
"I haven't heard it suggested,"
one of them said.
"But I am the great sage, equal of heaven," said Monkey. "I don't see why I shouldn't be invited."
"We can only tell you who is invited according to the rules,"
they said.
"What will be done this time, we don't know."
"Quite right, my dears," said Monkey. "I'm not blaming you. Just you wait here while I go off and scout round a little to see whether I'm to be invited or not to be invited."
Dear Monkey, he recited a magic formula and cried to the maidens,
"Stay, stay, stay."
This was a fixing magic, and the fairies, in consequence of it, remained rooted to the spot where they stood. Monkey set off on his magic cloud, sailed clear of the garden, and hastened towards the Pool of Green Jade. On the way, he ran straight into the Red-Legged Immortal. At once he thought of a plan by which he might trick the immortal and attend the feast himself.
"Old Wisdom, where are you going?"
he asked.
"I've been invited to the peach banquet," the immortal answered.
"Oh, you probably haven't heard,"
said Monkey.
"I've been asked by the Jade Emperor, because I get about so fast on my cloud, to go round to all guests and tell them there's going to be a rehearsal of ceremonies first in the Hall of Penetrating Light."
The immortal was a guileless soul, and was completely taken in.
"Other years we've always had the rehearsal at the same place as the banquet," he said. "However, I'm much obliged."
and turning his cloud, he made towards the hall of penetrating light. Then, reciting a spell, Monkey changed himself into the exact image of the red-legged immortal and went straight to the green jade pool. After a little while, he came to the treasure tower and stepped softly in. Everything was set out for the feast, but no one had yet arrived. Monkey was gazing at the scene when suddenly a smell of brewing assaulted him. He turned round, and in a gallery on the right he saw a number of fairy ministrants making wine. Some were carrying the mashed grain, others bringing water. Boys were keeping up the fire, jugs were being washed and jars swept. The wine that had already been made was exhaling a delicious perfume. Monkey's mouth watered, and he would have gone and drunk some at once, had it not been for the presence of all these servants. He was obliged to employ his magic powers. Pulling out a handful of his finest down, he tossed it into his mouth and bit it into ever smaller pieces. Then he spat it out, crying, "Change!" And the hares changed into so many drowsy insects, which flew towards the servants and settled on their cheeks. Look at them! How their hands fall to their sides, and their heads sink down, their eyes close, and they fall asleep. Monkey then snatched up some of the finest viands, the daintiest dishes, ran into the gallery, seized a jug, tilted a jar, set to, and drank deeply. When he had been drinking some time and was already pretty drunk, he thought to himself,
"Bad, bad. The guests will soon be arriving, and I shall get into trouble, for it's no good staying here. I had better go and have a sleep in my own quarters."
Dear Monkey, staggering and blundering along, very much the worse for liquor, he lost his way, and instead of getting home, he arrived at the Tushita Palace. Suddenly he came to himself and realized where he was.
"Why, this is where Lao Tzu lives," he said to himself. "How did I get here? Well,
I've always wanted to meet that old man, and have never had the chance. It wouldn't be a bad idea, as I am here, to go and have a look at him." So he tidied his clothes and went in. But there were no signs of Lao Tzu or anyone else. Actually, Lao Tzu was in an upper room with Dipankara, Buddha of the past, expounding the way to an audience of immortal officers, pages, and officials. Monkey went straight to the alchemical laboratory. There was no one there, but a brazier at one side of the hearth was burning, with five gourds arranged round it, and in these gourds was finished elixir.
"This," said Monkey to himself in high glee, "is the highest treasure of the immortals. Since my illumination, I have solved the secret of the identity of inside and outside. I was on the verge of producing a little elixir on my own account, when, unexpectedly, I came home and was busy with other things. I think I'll try a pill or two."
He tilted the gourds and ate up the contents for all the world as if it had been a dish of fried beans. After a while, full of elixir and the effects of the wine now wearing off, he again took stock of the situation and said to himself, "Bad, bad. This escapade of mine is even more unfortunate than the last. If the Jade Emperor gets to hear of it, I am lost. Run, run, run! I was better off as a king in the world below." He rushed out of the Tushita Palace, not going his usual way, but making for the western gate of heaven. Here he used a magic that made him invisible, and lowered his cloud till he was back on the borders of the mountain of flowers and fruit. A flash of banners and gleam of spears told him that his followers were practicing the arts of war. "Little ones, I'm here!" he cried aloud. They all flung down their weapons and fell upon their knees. "Great sage," they said, "you're very neglectful of your subjects. Fancy going off this while without a thought about what becomes of us." However, they made a great banquet to welcome him, and brought him a huge stone bowl full of date wine. After drinking a mouthful, he made a very wry face, saying,
"The horrible stuff! I can't drink this!"
Two of his generals rushed forward.
"Great sage,"
he said. No doubt in the palace of heaven you have been drinking the wine of the immortals, and for that reason cannot stomach this date wine. But the proverb says, there is no water like home water.
And it goes on, there are no folk like home folk, said Monkey. When I was enjoying myself at the Palace of Green Jade, I saw flagon after flagon of jade juice and ruby extract, such as you have never in your lives tasted. I'll go back and steal some for you, half a cup each, and you'll none of you ever grow old.
All the monkeys were delighted, and the sage went out to the cave door, turned his somersault, and made himself invisible and returned to heaven. He found the makers of wine, carriers of dregs and water and lighters of fire, all still snoring heavily. Taking a couple of large flagons, one under each arm, and two more, one in each hand, he turned his cloud and came back. A great assembly of monkeys was held, and each got a cupful or two. There was a rapturous scene. Meanwhile, the seven fairy maidens remained spellbound a whole day. When at last they could move, they took up their flower baskets, and going back to the Queen of Heaven, they told her that the sage equal of heaven had held them back by magic, and that was why they were so late.
"How many peaches did you pick?"
she asked.
"We got two baskets of small peaches and three baskets of middling peaches, but when we came to the back of the garden, we found that half the big peaches were already gone. It seems that the great sage has eaten them. While he was being looked for, he suddenly appeared in our midst, made a fearful scene, and asked who had been invited to the banquet. We told him about the usual arrangements for such feasts, whereupon he bound us by a spell and went off we didn't know where. We've only just managed to break the spell and come back."
The Queen of Heaven went straight to the Jade Emperor and was telling him what had happened when a crowd of winemakers and other celestial officials came pouring in, announcing that someone had made a mess of all the arrangements of the banquet, stolen the wine, and eaten up all the dainties. At this moment, the supreme patriarch of Teo was announced. The emperor and his consort went out to meet him.
"I am sorry to have to report to your majesties," said Lao Tzu, "that the elixir which I was concocting for the next cinnabar banquet has been stolen."
Presently, one of Monkey's celestial attendants arrived and reported that the great sage had been missing since the day before, and no one knew what had become of him. The Jade Emperor's suspicions were now confirmed. At this point, the red-legged immortal appeared before the throne.
"I was on my way to the banquet," he said, "in response to Her Majesty's invitation, when I met the great sage, Equal of Heaven, who told me that he'd been asked to inform all guests that they were to go first to the Hall of Penetrating Light and rehearse the ceremonies of the banquet. I did as he said, but when I got there, I saw no sign of Her Majesty's having arrived, and thought it better to come at once to court."
The Jade Emperor was more outraged and astonished than ever.
"So the rogue counterfeits imperial orders and deceives my ministers," he exclaimed. "Tell the celestial detective to get on to his tracks at once."
After an exhaustive inquiry, the detective reported that the disturbances in heaven had been caused by the great sage. The Jade Emperor then commanded the kings of the four quarters and Vaisravana and his son to marshal the 28 lunar mansions, the 9 planets, the 12 hours, and all the stars, together with 100,000 heavenly soldiers, and draw a cordon round the mountain of flowers and fruit, so that Monkey should have no escape. When this had been done, the 9 planets were called upon to issue the challenge. Monkey and his generals were drinking wine from heaven when he was told that the planets were at the door. He refused to worry himself.
"If today you have wine, get drunk today. Pay no heed to what is at the door, be it good or ill," he quoted. A small imp now scurried up, saying that these 9 fierce deities were raging at the gate, flinging battle taunts.
Monkey only laughed. "Don't pay any attention to them," he said. "Poetry and wine are enough to make this day glad. High deeds must take their turn. Glory can afford to wait."
But while he was speaking, another imp rushed in.
"Father," he cried, "those 9 fierce deities have broken down the gates and are advancing to the attack."
"Have those scoundrels no manners?"
cried Monkey.
"I've never interfered with them. Why should they come here worrying me?"
And he ordered the one-horned ogre to lead out the kings of the 72 caves to battle, while he and his 4 generals came in the rear. The ogre and his followers could get no further than the iron bridge. Here the planets barred their path.
"Make way!"
cried Monkey, and he strode through their midst, brandishing his cudgel. The planets dared not oppose him and beat a hasty retreat. When they had reformed their ranks a little way back, their leader cried,
"Insensate gloom! What crime is there that you have not committed? You have stolen peaches and stolen wine, upset the high feast, purloined Leo Tzu's elixir, and then taken more wine for your banquet here. You have piled up sin upon sin. Do you not realize what you have done?"
"Quite true,"
said Monkey.
"All quite true. What are you going to do about it?"
"We have been sent by the Jade Emperor," he said, "to receive your submission. If you surrender at once, you will be spared. If not, we shall stamp on your mountain till it is flat and smash your cave to bits."
"And where are you going to get the strength from?" asked Monkey. "To do that? How dare you talk such nonsense? Stand your ground and take old Monkey's cudgel." The planets leapt at him, but Monkey was no whit afraid. He brandished his cudgel, parrying here and thrusting there, till the planets were quite worn out, and one by one slunk away, trailing their weapons after them to seek refuge in their tents.
"That Monkey King is a valiant fighter indeed," they said to Vaisravada. "We were unable to overcome him and had to give up the fight."
The kings of the 4 quarters and the 28 lunar mansions were then ordered to advance. But Monkey did not quail, but bade the one horned ogre, the kings of the 72 caves, and his 4 valiant generals to take their stand outside the cave. The combat began at dawn and lasted till the sun sank behind the western hills. The one horned ogre and all the kings of the 72 caves were captured and carried away. Only the 4 generals and the monkeys escaped and hid in the far recesses of the cave. But Monkey, all alone, cudgel in hand, held back the kings of the 4 quarters, Vaisravana and Netha, warring with them halfway up the sky. At last, seeing the dusk was at hand, he plucked a handful of his hairs, tossed them into his mouth, chewed them up small and spat them out, crying, "Change!" Whereupon they changed into thousands of monkeys, each armed with a metal-plated cudgel. They drove back Vaisravana, Netha, and the 4 kings. Then Monkey, at last victorious, withdrew the hares and returned to his cave. At the iron bridge he was met by the 4 generals and all the host of monkeys. On seeing him they wailed 3 times and laughed hee-hee-ho-ho 3 times.
"What made you wail 3 times and laugh 3 times when you saw me?" asked Monkey. "We wailed," they said, "because the one-horned ogre and the 72 kings were defeated and captured, and because we had to fly for our lives. We laugh with joy because you have come back victorious and unharmed." "There is always defeat in victory, and victory in defeat," said Monkey. "There is an old saying, to slay 10,000 costs 3,000. In this case, the chieftains captured were all tigers, leopards, wolves, and the like. Not one of our monkey kind was taken or hurt, so there is nothing to worry about. By the art of self-division, I have put them to flight. But it is certain that they have encamped at the foot of our mountain. We must keep strict guard and husband our strength. Tomorrow you shall see me use my most potent magic against these divinities and avenge the captured."
Then the 4 generals and all the monkeys drank a cup or two of date wine and went quietly to sleep.
After the retreat of the kings of the four quarters, all the celestial warriors told of their deeds. Some had captured tigers and leopards, some deer, some wolves and foxes, but not one of them could boast that he had taken a monkey. They did indeed, as Monkey had foretold, set up a camp, surrounding it with a great palisade. Here the meritorious were rewarded, and the troops who formed the cordon round the caves were instructed to give warning by bell or cry, and be ready for the great battle that would begin at dawn. How they fared after day broke, you will hear in the next chapter. So the great sage quietly rested while the hosts of heaven encompassed him. Meanwhile, the great compassionate Bodhisattva Kuan Yin had come at the invitation of the Queen of Heaven to attend the great feast. With her, she brought her chief disciple, Hui Yin, and on arriving they were astounded to find the banqueting halls in utter desolation and confusion. The couches were broken or pushed aside, and although there were a few immortals, they had not attempted to take their places, but were standing about in noisy groups, protesting and disputing. After saluting the Bodhisattva, they told her the whole story of what had occurred.
"If there is no banquet and no drinks are going," she said, "you had better all come with me to see the Jade Emperor."
On the way they met the red-legged immortal and others, who told them that a heavenly army had been sent to arrest the culprit, but had not yet returned.
"I should like to see the Emperor," said Kuan Yin. "I must trouble you to announce my arrival."
Liao Tzu was with the Emperor and the Queen of Heaven in attendance behind the throne.
"What about the peach banquet?" Kuan Yin asked after the customary greetings had been exchanged.
"It has always been such fun, year after year," said the Emperor. "It is terribly disappointing that this year everything has been upset by that terrible ape. I have sent 100,000 soldiers to pen him in, but the whole day has passed without news, and I don't know whether they've been successful."
"I think you had better go down quickly to the mountain of flowers and fruit," said the Bodhisattva to her disciple Hui Yin, "and investigate the military situation. If hostilities are actually in progress, you can give a hand. In any case, let us know exactly how things stand."
When he arrived, he found a close cordon, many soldiers deep, with sentries on watch at every exit. The mountain was completely surrounded, and escape impossible. Day was just breaking when Hui Yin, who was the second son of Vajrasrabana and had been called Prince Moksha before his conversion, was shown into his father's tent.
"Where do you come from, my son?"
asked Vajrasrabana.
"I have been sent to see how things are going on," he said. "Well, I camped here yesterday," said Vajrasrabana, "and I sent the 9 planets as challengers, but they were unable to stand up against this rogue's magic, and returned discomfited. Then I led an army myself, and he marshalled his followers. We were about 100,000 men, and fought with him till dusk, when he used some magic method of self-multiplication, and we had to withdraw. On examining our booty, we found we had captured a certain number of tigers, wolves, leopards, and other animals, but not a single monkey. Today, the fight has not yet begun." While they were speaking, a messenger rushed in and announced that the great sage and all his host of monkeys were outside shouting their battle cries. The kings of the four quarters, Vajrasrabana and his son Netha, had just agreed to go out and meet him, when Hui Yin said, "Father, I was sent by the Bodhisattva to obtain information, but she said that if hostilities were in progress, I was to lend a hand. I confess I should like to go and have a look at this great sage of yours." "My son," said Vajrasrabana, "you cannot have studied with the Bodhisattva for so many years without having learned some form of magic. Don't forget to put it into practice."
"Dear prince,"
girding up his embroidered cloak and brandishing his iron cudgel with both hands, he rushed out to the camp gate, crying in a loud voice, "Which of you is the great sage, equal of heaven?" Monkey held up his wishing staff and answered, "I am he. Who are you that you so rashly dare inquire for me?" Hui Yen said, "I am Vaisravana's second son, Moksha. Now I am pupil and defender of the Bodhisattva Kuan Yin, and stand before her throne. My name in religion is Hui Yen."
"What then are you doing here?" asked Monkey.
I was sent," said he, to get news of the battle, and as they are having so much trouble with you, I have come myself to arrest you."
"How dare you talk so big?"
said Monkey.
"Stand your ground and taste old Monkey's cudgel."
Moksha was not at all afraid, but advanced, flourishing his iron cudgel. These two stood face to face at the foot of the mountain outside the gate of the camp. It was a grand fight. They closed 50 or 60 times, till at last Hui Yen's arms and shoulders were aching. He could resist no more and fled from the battlefield. Monkey, too, withdrew his monkey troops and bade them rest outside the cave. Moksha, still gasping and panting, tottered into his father's camp.
"It's only too true," he said. "That great sage is indeed the most formidable of magicians. I could do nothing with him, and have had to come back leaving him in possession of the field."
Vaisravana was very astonished. He saw nothing for it but to write out an appeal for further help. This he entrusted to the demon king Mahabali, and his son, Moksha, who at once passed through the cordon and soared to heaven.
"How are you people down below getting on?"
asked Kuan Yin.
"My father told me," said Hui Yin, "that in the first day's battle they captured a number of tigers, leopards, wolves, and other animals, but not a single monkey. Soon after I arrived, the battle began again, and I closed with the great sage some 50 or 60 times, but could not get the better of him, and was obliged to retire to the camp. My father then sent the demon king Mahabali and me to ask for help."
The Bodhisattva Kuan Yin bowed her head and reflected.